Chapter 19, Preacher. I cannot believe that stupid general threw us back in here after we beat them fair and square. We even saved his life, whined Vercera for the 100th time as she paced around their cell. I don't know. We've been here so often that it's starting to feel like home, Janus casually observed. I'm just going to miss having decent meals. Prison food is so bland. I miss having comfortable furniture, complained Terra, who was sitting on the floor of their bare and windowless cell. She had barely finished her complaint when the door burst open and General Jeremy strode in.
The prisoners will stand along the back wall, he commanded.
Then, with a wave of his hand, people began entering the cell carrying furnishings. Beds were placed along the two walls farthest from the privy. Two overstuffed sofas, several chairs, and a large dining room set were installed in the center of the room. Brightly colored paintings were carried in and carefully hung. The building was transformed from a prison cell into a warm, but still windowless, cottage in a matter of minutes. The workers silently completed their tasks, but kept risking quick glances at the prisoners. Stavius wasn't sure, but the look seemed more admiring than fearful. The general beckoned in a second crew once the room was furnished. These helpers brought in a tablecloth, dishes, cutlery, silverware, and platters of steaming food. The servers quickly disappeared. General Jeremy surveyed the room and nodded with satisfaction. He politely said, "Lunch is served. Would you mind if Jim Joe and I join y'all?" Nariana was unable to do more than nod, so Terra replied, "It looks delicious, General. We would be honored with your presence." "Thank ye, but the honor is all mine," General Jeremy said with a slight bow. Jim Joe entered the structure, closed the door, and began passing around the food.
"Let's eat. I'm starved, and the chef made this meal especially for y'all."
They sat around the large table and began serving food. It smelled delicious, but Stavius paused and asked the questions which were on everyone's mind. "Why are you treating us so nice if we're under arrest? And why are we under arrest?" General Jeremy sighed and said,
"I arrested y'all 'cause I had no choice. Y'all ain't familiar with our ways, so I let Jim Joe explain. Would ye pass the taters, please?"
Jim Joe explained that the Lachians pride themselves on how little magic they use. It is more than a matter of pride, though. Magic is considered the devil's work, and they believe that true enlightenment can only be achieved when all magic is purged from your life. Of course, people cannot survive on Mirth without magic. Everyone periodically visits the baths to recharge their psyche, but the strongest and most pious make those visits as short and infrequent as possible. The Lachians only permit magical energy to be used to sustain human life and to be absorbed sparingly. Using magical power to perform spells is strictly forbidden and punishable by death. Drawing magical energy into the community is so horrific and inconceivable that the act isn't even covered by any laws, but Jim Joe has some very graphic ideas of what such a punishment might entail. So, we'd be out there in relative freedom if we hadn't saved your life, observed Nariana with a grimace.
That's right. Now please pass the gravy, agreed General Jeremy. By the way, thank y'all again for that kind act. It was the most incredible moment of my life.
But, said Nariana, but she couldn't find the words to continue. General Jeremy sighed and said,
I know it ain't fair, but it is the law. However, there ain't nothing in the law that says y'all can't be comfortable in your confinement, and frankly, the entire town is in awe of what y'all did. Y'all call yourselves heroes, and we agree, but we're going to have to kill y'all tomorrow. Sorry about that.
Terra asked whether there were any exceptions or special circumstances to overrule or at least delay the sentence, but Jim Joe sadly shook his head. Then Janus glumly noted that they hadn't even completed the sentencing for their first crime. Jim Joe suddenly brightened and exclaimed,
Ye are a genius! Y'all can't be tried for a second crime till the proceedings regarding the first is done. So y'all can't be executed for using magic till preacher says y'all ain't the prophecy heroes.
And what if he concludes that we are the prophecy heroes? Asked Stavius.
There ain't no cause to worry about that, because that ain't never going to happen,
Jim Joe assured them.
Preacher is firm in his beliefs, and he's preached many times about false gods. Besides, everybody knows the prophecy, and it don't mention them four heroes bringing along no friends.
But if your preacher does recognize us as the prophecy heroes, then maybe we'd be considered an exception to your law, Janice hopefully asked.
Well, I might be able to argue that, but even if it did, it would simply mean that the decision about what to do with y'all would be up to the king, and she don't like y'all very much.
What does she have against us anyway? Asked Narayana in frustration.
Well, for one thing, y'all are from Septungulus, and we've been at war with all y'all for hundreds of years, answered General Jeremy.
Wait, does anyone in Septungulus even know we're at war with you? I've never heard of the Latians, much less of any war with you guys, exclaimed Versera with nods of agreement from the others.
That's 'cause we ain't got the resources to attack all y'all, but y'all certainly like to attack us, answered General Jeremy.
Okay, but what's this war supposed to be about? Asked Elisa.
Wars are usually about land or religion, but neither of those seems to be much of an issue here.
No, it's about people and how the seven families treat them, whispered Terra. Septumculans don't consider anyone who doesn't embrace magic to be human. Stavius stared at her. He knew from personal experience that she was right, but had no idea what that had to do with the Latians.
And if people ain't human, then they ain't got no rights. And if y'all ain't got no rights, then y'all can be treated as property, said Jim Joe.
Then he explained that Septumculus is built in a large pool of magical energy, which was why that site was chosen. The problem is that places where the magic was strong enough for Septumculums to work and weak enough not to poison the food were rare. This wasn't an issue when the town was small, but became a significant problem as the population swelled. The Septumculums needed somewhere to grow edible food along with the people to farm it. The Latians, with their ability to survive in low magic areas, were ideal candidates for this. They had no rights by Septumculum law, so there was no legal issue with enslaving them. The seven families put aside any ethical concerns by concluding that the gods had created this unique subrace of people to serve the real humans of Septumculus. The seven families constructed a vast farm in an area with no magical energy. They brought batteries containing sufficient magical power to sustain the Septumculum overseers and to maintain a force field around the farm to keep the slaves in. Crops, supplies, and replacement troops shipped to and from Septumculus several times a year. One of the dirty secrets of the seven families is that Septumculus could not survive without this farm and the Latian slave labor. The Latians used to have a vibrant society with a network of towns and farms. The Septumculums ended that a few hundred years ago when their raiding parties captured Latian men and women and forced them to be slave labor for their farm. The Latian population was decimated, and the remaining Latians now spend their lives in walled cities for protection. 2 years ago, a large raiding party attacked this town while the royal family and most of the troops were away on business. They carried away most of the able-bodied adults, and the king returned to a town filled with dead bodies, children, and elderly grandparents. Her own daughter, Princess Doreen, who was heir to the throne, was captured and taken as a slave. The travelers sat in silence as the echo of Jim Joe's story faded off the walls.
"We had no idea," whispered Elisa. "I hate those people," said Stavius.
"We are in so much trouble," lamented Janice. The preacher, who everyone called Preacher, and the king were enjoying a good laugh as the travelers were escorted into the town hall. Their joviality vanished as soon as they espied the six prisoners.
"So these are the heathens pretending to be the children of the prophecy. Well, I must say that they are a disappointing lot indeed. Yes, indeed,
said Preacher in a sing-song voice which seemed to reach every corner of the large room.
Yes, that is what they claim, your devoutedness, answered Jim Joe.
The travelers had agreed to let him speak on their behalf this time.
And how do they claim to know of their ordainment to this position?
Preacher smoothly asked.
They say they were selected for this honor by the Soul Reapers,
Jim Joe replied. Jim Joe appeared distinctly uncomfortable as he said this, and the king looked puzzled.
Soul Reapers are fictional creatures which often appear in Septuagint mythology. They are used to scare small children into proper behavior. They are not real,
Preacher explained to the king.
But a horrible way to raise children, said the king in disgust. Yes, indeed. It is a small wonder that the Septuagint progeny turns out as despicable as they do,
agreed Preacher.
And what of this prophecy y'all claim you are to fulfill? Are there not six of y'all, while your prophecy speaks of but four? And let us hear from these self-proclaimed heroes themselves, shall we?
Asked Preacher with a smug smile. Narayana pointed toward Stavius, Versera, and Elise as she replied, We four are the prophecy heroes, and we are accompanied by two friends.
And who are these friends?
Asked Preacher. Stavius answered, Janus is known as the key in the prophecy, and Terra is my aunt. Preacher laughed.
So the great prophecy heroes have a chaperone. How reassuring! And how are y'all destined to fulfill your prophecy?
We must retrieve the seven talismans to restore magic to the world, answered Versera.
Oh my! I imagine that would not endear you to the seven families at all, now would it?
Observed Preacher with a click of his tongue. No, sir, they tried to execute us, admitted Narayana.
Yes, I have heard as much in my travels. Tell me, can one of y'all recite the bedtime prayer that teach every child in Septuagint?
Asked Preacher. The travelers looked confused at this request, but recited the poem. Praise to God's Venus and Luna and Mars. Praise to the hunter returned from the stars. Above all, praise Terra, the god of the earth, for giving our world its pure magical birth. Save all that is good from those who shall come to plunder our world and make magic undone. Protect us from evil disguised as the good, and help us to live in the ways that we should. Preacher smiled and said,
Yes, that is indeed how it goes. It is another story the Septuagint parents teach their children to keep the ruling class in power. Y'all claim that y'all are good, and that wresting the talismans from the seven families will restore magic. Yet they teach that your true objective is to steal the power from them. That means, by extension, y'all are stealing from the people of Septuagint. It is small wonder that they consider y'all their enemy, is it not?
Exactly, cried Narayana. That is why we are on your side.
I think not, child, disagreed Preacher. Y'all might be the enemies of the Septuagints, but if y'all are who y'all claim, then y'all are most certainly also the enemies of the good people of Latia. Y'all claim y'all wish to restore the magic in the world, while we believe that we will only be free once the magic is eradicated. So y'all see that in y'all's case, the enemy of our enemy is also our enemy. All y'all may or may not be the heroes of the false Septuagint prophecy, but y'all are not the heroes of the one true prophecy.
Concluded Preacher.
Wait, just one minute, interrupted Jim Joe. Can I ask something before y'all make your decision? But of course, crooned Preacher, we wouldn't want any impropriety. Please proceed.
Jimjo turned toward the prisoners and asked, "How are y'all doing on fulfilling your prophecy?"
"Well, we've stolen two of the talismans from the seven families," answered Stavius.
"So I have heard, and where are those talismans now?"
asked Preacher as he leaned closer to the prisoners, a little too eagerly.
"They are safely hidden. You needn't fear that the seven families will regain possession of them," Terra quickly answered. Preacher leaned back in his chair and motioned to Jimjo to continue.
Jimjo asked, "And do y'all believe that y'all will fulfill your prophecy? Is that still your primary goal?"
Stavius answered, "It isn't looking too likely at the moment."
"And I really don't care about the stupid prophecy anymore," added Narayana. "I just want to destroy those seven families for what they've done to us."
"And for what we just learned they've been doing to other people," added Stavius. "People in Septumpolis always considered me to be less than human because I couldn't do magic. So it doesn't surprise me that they think the same of the Latians. I doubt very many people know that the seven families use slavery, but I seriously doubt that many would fight it if they did. It makes me sick."
The others nodded in agreement.
"And do y'all think you've hurt the seven families?" asked Jimjo.
"Oh, yeah," laughed Narayana. "Stavius and Janus destroyed their marketplace and Admian Castle and stole the ring-held family's talisman. I'm sure they're struggling without it." Versera added, "And don't forget the bridge. Seeing that thing fall into the river with their army stranded on the far side was one of the best sights of my life. I want nothing more than to go back and finish them off."
Preacher smiled and said, "That is a very noble desire, young lady, and I'm certain it's one y'all hope will curry favor with us. However, I assure ye that we are above your trickery."
"But what if it ain't?" asked Jimjo. "What if it ain't trickery?"
"I ain't following your thinking, Jimjo," answered Preacher with a puzzled expression.
"Can any of y'all tell us the Latian prophecy?" Jimjo asked the prisoners.
They all shook their heads, and Janus said, "We already told you that we had never even heard of the Latians before we were captured. I just assumed you had the same prophecy as us."
"Do y'all believe them?" Jimjo asked Preacher and the king.
"Yes, I do, but I fail to see your point," complained Preacher.
"I believe them too," agreed Jimjo. "Perhaps y'all could enlighten them about the true prophecy, Preacher."
"I think not, Jimjo. This ain't the time nor the place for a religious discussion," disagreed Preacher.
Jimjo waved his hands and said, "Oh, heck, I just meant give them the gist of it. Why don't y'all just recite the bedtime prayer we teach our young'uns? It would be an uplifting way to finish this trial."
Preacher looked uncomfortable, but saw no reason not to acquiesce to this unusual request.
"The hunter's shape will fall from the stars. Praise Terra, Venus, Luna, and Mars. When four young souls this world done come, three daughters brave and one strong son, the slaves will rise from their oppression, and y'all will march to y'all salvation. The world shall end, it shall begin. Y'all gonna try once more again."
"It sounds so beautiful when y'all say it, Preacher. I swear it inspires me as much now as when I was a little boy," marveled Jimjo.
He paused for a moment before continuing.
"I don't know nothing about no Septumculan prophecy, but ain't it a funny coincidence that our own prophecy talks about three girls and a boy appearing to help free our slaves and lead us to salvation? And y'all saw these four beat six of our strongest fighters unarmed, and the incredible power they used to bring our general back from the dead. Now all us pious Latians are sworn never to use magic, and know we will never gain salvation if we do. But what if the gods sent us these four to willingly sacrifice their own salvation by using magic to free our people? What if they are the gods' gift to destroy our enemies so we can come out of hiding and live in the glory of the world? I ask you, do we dare have the hubris to reject such a possibility?"
Jimjo's voice had been rising in pitch and volume throughout his closing remarks to the point where he was sounding like a preacher himself. Preacher and the king sat in stunned silence, and the king was the first to speak.
"Can your magic free our people? Can y'all save my daughter?"
she asked the prisoners.
"I don't know," answered Stavius.
Narayana quickly added, "But take us to the slave farm, and we will find a way to free her and the rest of your people."
The king looked at Preacher for his judgment, and Preacher said,
"I do not believe that these children are the heroes of the true prophecy."
He then glanced at the king, who was glaring at him before continuing.
"However, I am a fair and righteous man, and thus propose one more test. My advice to ye, my liege, is to escort these prisoners to that horrific slave farm. If these children are indeed able to free our enslaved Latium citizens, then I shall reconsider my conclusion. If they are not, well, then the gods themselves will provide our answer by their execution."
Preacher then rose and exited the hall. The prisoners breathed a sigh of relief, and Versera leaned over to Jimjo to say,
"You were amazing."
Jimjo was grinning when the king stopped in front of him on his way out and hissed,
"They will save my daughter, or your head will join theirs."
The king followed Preacher out of the room, and once they were out of earshot, General Jeremy shouted,
"Drinks are on me!"